Welcome to our live Q&A call. It is wonderful to have you all on the phone. We are going to do a few things during this hour. First, we are going to just state our intention for the calls. Second, Anna is going to share a great meditation from an Edgar Cayce book that she has been reading. And then we're going to take a little time for anyone to share some inspirational stories or quotes or books or anything that they've come across in the last couple of weeks. And then we're going to open up to live Q&A. We also have taken some questions from the community forum and also from Life Force Families, and we will get to those if we have time. But again, welcome, and we're so, so happy to have you on the call with us. And just for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is only the second time we've done this call with this particular group, we just wanted to go through the intention that we have for these calls. And the purpose of these calls is to create a safe and loving space for cleansers at all stages to connect, learn, and share with each other. We are here to offer physical, mental, and emotional tools to help you create more peace, more balance, and joy in your lives. By sharing this time together, we will all raise our vibrations so we are able to grow, evolve, and be a beneficial presence to those in our lives. So, a lot to accomplish in 1 hour, but every week we'll just continue to grow and learn a lot from each other. So, let's go ahead and dive in. Anna, if you'd like to go ahead and do the meditation that you have planned.
Okay. Sure, and it's not a meditation as much as a kind of lesson that Edgar Cayce does in building your own meditation. And this is, if anybody's not familiar with Edgar Cayce, this is a Natalia introduction for me. He is a mystic and a healer, and he would famously help people find cures for all kinds of ailments. So for, and I'm putting cures in quotation marks here, you know, no medical claims here. but everything from emotional disturbances and mental disturbances to physical imbalances to serious disease. And he would do it by channeling outside wisdom and by investigating dreams. So a really cool, really different way of looking at things. And a lot of his work centered around healing the body with food, which is our work here as well. So the audios that I've been listening to that are guided by Edgar Cayce are pretty incredible. And the idea is to build your own meditation that works just for you using four components that he recommends. And it's been so effective for me, and I wanted to share them with you guys. The first element of building your own meditation is to set the mood. And I found that for myself, it really helps to be in the same time and the same place. I'm a creature of habit, we all are, and it is really nice to get up and sit on your special cushion or listen to your special music or have a cue that you know is meditation time. So maybe it's right when the alarm goes off in the morning, you get up and you have a meditation. Maybe it's right when you drop your kids off at school. So setting the time and the place, creating the best setting for the meditation is the first part. So that can be music. I find Bach very helpful. It can be lighting. Some people like to meditate in the dark. Some people like to meditate by candlelight. Some people like to meditate in the sunlight. And he also recommends that you start your meditation with sincere prayer. So that's another way to start your meditation. And I know that, for example, in 12-step groups, they do the Serenity Prayer, which starts and ends 12-step meetings. I know that many churches have a prayer that they choose to start with. It's common in a lot of spiritualities, and sometimes it just helps to really pray for the thing that you're really worried about when you're starting your meditation or really want help with. The second part, so after you set the mood and really create a platform for meditation that feels familiar to you, the next part of your meditation should be silence. So that's element number two. And Edgar Cayce recommends meditating on a single thought. A lot of spiritualities call this a mantra. He also calls it an affirmation. And one of the ones that he recommends that I've found to be particularly beautiful is, let me be a channel of peace in the world. So if you hold that single thought, whatever your thought is, and that's one that you'll create for yourself, I love let me be a channel of peace in the world. You'll just keep holding on to that thought. So this is a period of meditation where when distractions come up, you let them go and you gently keep returning to the thought. And you're not just internally saying the words, like, let me be a channel of peace in the world. You're really feeling the meaning of the words. So what does it feel like to be a channel of peace? How is that peace flowing through you? As you're saying the words of your mantra or your affirmation, you're feeling the meaning. So that's the period of silence in a meditation. The next element of meditation that Edgar Cayce recommends is a time of peaceful prayer for others. So this is a time where you send healing out into the world. You send prayer to people in your life who you know need it. You send a message of peace out, you know, to the universe at large, out to humanity, out to somebody or a group of people that really need it. But this is your time to channel that feeling for other people. So this is not about you. This is about creating peace and healing outside of you, with you as their channel. Then element number four is where you get answers for yourself. And this, he recommends guided imagery. Edgar Cayce, although he was a channel for finding these solutions for other people, solutions to physical ailments and solutions for emotional and mental ailments, he always recommended that the highest possible authority was your highest self. And a lot of his work centers around teaching people how to get at that higher self so that they don't need him as a channel. They could use themselves. And so element number four of a meditation, he really recommended guided imagery to have a way that you go in and you get the answers you're looking for. One of the meditations that he does on this audio that I think is really beautiful is a story where you go out of your home and you see a mountain in the distance and you climb the mountain and at the very top is a library and you go in and you find a book and inside that book are all of your memories and experiences. And some of them are on golden pages. And these are the ones that really stand out. And if you're looking for an answer in that library, you can ask someone who's there. You can pull a book off the shelf and get an answer there. But if there's a question or something that you need to learn about or that you're looking for a solution for, something that's frustrating you, something that you really need help with, he recommends that guided imagery of going into a library and selecting a book or looking through your own personal book of memories to come up with a solution. For myself, I've created a chest at the bottom of a sea where I dive into the ocean and I go down and I open the chest and I usually find what I'm looking for there. Or I have a garden that I can go into and there'll usually be someone there who will give me some guidance. But creating a scenario for yourself that's familiar and comforting and very, very visual so that you know that when you open that door and start walking down those stairs or open that gate and enter that garden or start climbing that mountain, you're on a familiar route to a place where you're able to get answers from your higher self. And that's what I wanted to share with all of you today because it's been so powerful for me and I think it's so wonderful to build your own meditation practice based on the things that feel right for you. I hope that was helpful.
Awesome. It's very, very cool. Do you can you tell everybody the name of the audios that you've been listening to?
Ooh, gosh, yes, I can. It's right here. And it's actually not, this audio does not actually have, Edgar Cayce didn't record any audios, so this is all other people basing their teachings on his teachings. I'm going to pull up the name right now.
And then I wanted to do a quick poll, too, just curious. To see how many of you have integrated meditation into your life as part of your cleansing process and your healing process. So for those of you who regularly, who would say you have a regular meditation practice, go ahead and press 1. If you intermittently do it kind of here and there, go ahead and press 2, and this is on your phone. If you never do it, go ahead and press 3. And then if you would like to learn more about how to do it, Actually, no, don't do that one. Just one, two, or three for now, because I think that another option will confuse things. So you do it all the time.
I highly recommend any of his books. This is something that Natalia turned me on to that I really enjoy. And he has a bunch of different collections out where you can look at specific case histories where he helps someone. He's an encyclopedia of healing. And this one is called Channeling Your Higher Self. That's the name of the audio. It's read by Stanley Ralph Ross, and it's put out by the Edgar Cayce Foundation. So it's really coming from him, although it is not his voice.
Channeling Your Higher Self. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. So, and Cayce is spelled C-A-Y-C-E, so it's a kind of different spelling of Cayce.
All right, so for the poll, we have 22% of you meditate all the time, 29% of you meditate intermittently, and 7% not at all. So interesting. I think just to share my own experience with it, I remember the first year that I got into this work, I remember thinking, okay, I need to just sort of focus on the physical part of this, the eating, really master that, get that down. I know meditation is going to come, and I know it's going to be really powerful, but for now, I really just need to get this eating thing under control. Looking back, it's a little bit backwards that it would have been helpful to integrate the meditation to help me get control of the physical aspects, but it actually worked fine for me. So just for those of you who don't have it or who aren't doing it yet, it may be something you want to start playing around with. Getting that audio that Anna just suggested might be a great idea. But also don't stress. I remember sometimes feeling like, oh, my gosh, I know I need to be meditating, but I'm not meditating. So it would just be like one more thing that would be stressful in my life. So it doesn't need to be that. But for those of you who have made it regular practice, you all obviously know the power of it. And for those that are doing it intermittently, you probably know the power of it too, but sometimes it's just hard to get into that routine. But I love reinvigorating my own meditation with things like Anna, like what just Anna just suggested. So thank you so much for that, Anna.
Absolutely. And I have to say I've found for myself and for a good majority of my clients that a day without a meditation tends to be a much more difficult day, especially where food is concerned.
Absolutely. Great. Okay, so the next thing we wanted to do is just see, put it out to you, and see if any of you have come across, maybe you have an inspirational story you'd like to share with the group, a book that you're reading, a movie that you saw, a poem you'd like to share, anything that you feel would be helpful for those in the group. And remember, again, the more that we all share with each other and the more that we let this organically become what it wants to become, the more everyone's going to get out of it. So don't be shy. If there's anything that happened to you that you'd like to share or anything you came across, please go ahead and press 1 on your keypad now. And I'm sure everyone would love hearing from you and learning from you. If not, that's okay too, and we can move on. Okay, so I want to make sure I'm saying this name right. Please correct me if I'm not. I see the name Wella.
Yep.
Oh, Wella.
Me.
Hi, Wella.
Hi, Anna.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So my quick little story is for people who have read the few posts I posted about my juice feasting last year, my dog died in the middle of it. And I've always wondered, why did he up and die? You know, when he was over here, he was always so strong and so healthy because we fed him a raw food diet. He got exercise every day. And it struck me a few days ago why it didn't take him very long to deteriorate so quickly when he was living in the Philippines with my boyfriend's mom. And this is just my theory, and it would be, you know, if anybody has anything else to share or whatever they get out of this, you know, please do. So my theory is that because when he's coming from a lineage of dogs who are have really good, strong genes, but, you know, just like as it is with us, you know, their cellular, what's it called, integrity is also being impacted by the kind of food that they're being fed. So when he went all raw, when he was 3 months old, he did great, he was healthy. And then he stayed with my boyfriend's mom for a little bit. They got very lax with his food, and he became a little bit unhealthy. you started getting tumors, which I think is the same as it is in humans, like when waste starts to leave the colon, the body tries to contain it. And I think the same thing happened with him. And so he comes back here to the States and lives with us and gets all healthy again and beautiful. Then he goes back to the Philippines. And I think that constant detox, retox, I think that once you've become sensitized to a cleaner body and you've been living in a clean body for a while, I'm beginning to think that, you know, if you ever do decide to go back to, you know, a more, you know, so-called normal way, mainstream way of eating, like the results of that could actually be death, you know, or at least degeneration in a very, very short period of time. So that's just my little thing. And I was wondering, for people who have more experience than I do, what do you guys think about that?
If anyone wants to jump in on the conversation, go ahead and press 2. If you have anything to add.
I have to say that for the cellular integrity of animals, a wonderful thing to read is Gabriel Cousins.
Oh.
And I know that we talk about this a lot in some of Natalia's courses, but he speaks about a science experiment with generations of cats. And I would love to be able to be a little bit more specific about it, but the basic gist of the facts are that generationally, the cats who were fed raw-based foods and plant-based foods thrived, and the cats that were fed mainstream cat food slowly their lifespan, and it's interesting with cats because they have such a shorter lifespan that we can really watch several generations.
Right.
And the cats that were fed mainstream food had terrible health problems and significantly shorter lifespan. And
well, and also, Anna, they ended up...
It got worse and worse and worse very, very rapidly.
Well, yeah, Anna,
yeah,
the other thing
the
is...
To my dog.
Yeah, and they ended up infertile, which was really interesting, too, just
yes.
to correlate with our rising infertility rates. The cats after, you know, certain generation just became... certain amount of generations just became completely infertile.
Yeah, it was the opposite of survival of the fittest. They weren't able to survive anymore.
Yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead. Well, I just think it's really interesting, you know, because it's like, it's when that happened to my dog, it was like, it just made this whole lifestyle so much, I mean, it's very real for me. It's been life-changing, but when I finally understood as to why he degenerated so quickly after living such a healthy lifestyle for years. I mean, it was like, well, no duh, you know, of course. You know, it's like the body is in an active, cleansing, constantly moving, you know, state. And then, you know, it's getting rid of the toxins of the day, the toxins of, you know, God knows how long. And then all of a sudden, you know, you put him back on, you know, on a life-degenerating pattern. And then, of course, it's like, of course he would degenerate. It's like, why didn't I think about it sooner? But, you know, at that time I was just starting out and I was still stuck in my own muck, so. But
yeah, I think your intuition is definitely right on. I mean, and I think it's interesting to just, again, like, think about the fact that the dog's lifespan is so much shorter than ours, so we don't see it as obviously in humans, but yeah, it seems like that would be a very plausible explanation for what was happening. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Wella. And for those of you out there who don't know Wella, she has published her story on the community and is a veteran juice feaster. So she's a wealth of information and a wonderful resource. And Wella, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anna.
Right. Now, Shannon, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to share, I was on some of the calls a while back that Natalia did and just explaining juicing and this lifestyle, and had asked her, shared with her a question regarding dealing kind of a little bit with resistance I got from family in the juicing that I've been doing for about a year and a half, and just always get resistance and things. And just a couple weeks ago, my mom and dad, who are the primary ones about it, you know, in all of their and all of their questioning and some of the health things I've gone through, they've always contributed to juicing. But anyway, it was just interesting. A couple weeks ago, they had called and apologized for things and have since then been juicing themselves.
Wow.
And just, like, love it. And, I mean, they've just done, like, this 180. And it was so kind of eye-opening for me because it made the resistance that at the time felt so heavy. It seems now, like, so silly that it bothered me, you know, and it just made me realize that if I believe in what I'm doing, to not weigh so much on what other people think. And, you know, I mean, I didn't in the sense of it altering what I did, but it still bothered me. And then to see how when they saw the light, so to speak, how they've responded, it was just, you know, for me, a special moment I thought I'd share. So
that is very, very inspirational, and I'm sure many people are loving to hear that because I'm sure so many people experience the resistance from friends, family, colleagues, whatever it is. And what you are explaining is the benefit of patience and also focus.
If
we all stay focused on that which is true for us,
mm-hmm.
And we live that and we embody that, eventually, I mean, people will see that and they see the results of that and they see the peace and the joy and the vitality that you have. Eventually, people are going to, you know, start to think that you might be onto something. But it definitely doesn't always happen overnight.
Right. And it's just such a good feeling to see them embrace it as well, feeling as I do about how it promotes life, and it's just been wonderful. So
the other thing, Shannon, I think this for you and for everyone too, is remember that everyone has a different messenger. So for us, a lot of us, the light bulb turned on when we read Natalia's books, but for
mm-hmm.
some other people it will be a different messenger, and it also might not be you. It might not, the message might not be coming through you either, but just know that eventually everyone will come around to the truth, whether or not they hear it through you or they hear it through a different messenger. So that sometimes is helpful for me to just remember, just to let go and know that eventually, it might not even be in this lifetime, but eventually they'll align to what's natural and true as well. So
that is true. I feel like, you know, they watched and kind of critiqued, and it definitely wasn't through me. They had an experience through somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
That is just like the light bulb came on. And then it was funny because, I mean, my mom's almost, she's just done a 180 and she's totally into it. So it has been, that is so true. I mean, it was definitely kind of like the planting of seeds, and somebody else definitely got to see the harvest, but it was pretty cool.
Awesome.
So,
Thank you, Shannon.
I'm so thankful for these calls too. And also hearing Wella, because I've read her stories and, like, I'm just, you know, it's just amazing. So it's just neat to do these calls, too. So thank you.
Yeah, it's very neat. Yes.
Thank you. Thanks for contributing, too. Okay, anyone else want to share anything that has come up for them in the last couple of weeks since we met? Okay. Then we can go ahead and open it up to live Q&A. So questions that you have, dietetic or lifestyle, anything that you'd like to have answered. Go ahead and press 1 on your keypad if you have questions for us. All right, well, while we're waiting, Anna, let's go through a couple from the community and from LifeForce Families, too.
That sounds great. And also, guys, remember, you can always type in questions onto your keyboard if you're at a computer and you can't talk.
Yes, thank you. Okay, let's do this one. Do calories count, or is it all about the density, water content, quick exit qualities of food that matters? Natalia mentioned ladies should limit starchy foods and fats if you are trying to lose weight. Okay, sorry, this is the second question to that first one. Let's just go ahead and do the first one about the calories.
That whole question, I think we should talk about the whole question all together. The question is about density and water content and quick exit qualities versus calories, and what matters when you're trying to get a measure on a food, and also whether or not starchy foods and fats are conducive to weight loss. And this person asks, for example, avocados. Talk about avocados. This is a really great question. Calories are definitely not a method of measurement for this lifestyle. The things that we use are questions like, how is it combined? Questions like, how alkaline and water-containing is it? Questions like, how yeast and fungal feeding is it? So that's the ROSE program measuring stick would not have to do with things like calories or grams of fat or carbohydrates. It would have to do with the content of the food itself and its ability to elevate the human body and to rid the body of accumulation and obstruction. So the first part about calories, calories, the only thing that you need to use calories for are they can sometimes be a barometer of how dense a food is. So, for example, something like this is the example I always give, a spaghetti squash. For those of you that are familiar with spaghetti squash, once you bake spaghetti squash and you lift it out of the shell with a fork, it's so fluffy and juicy, and it's named spaghetti squash because it comes out looking like spaghetti. It's not very starchy. There's a really high water content to it. Very, very low calorically. However, if you compare that to something like acorn squash or butternut squash, if you take that out of the oven, it's been baking, and you scoop it out with a fork or a spoon, it's thicker and heavier and a little bit more starchy. And you can even, you know, if you rubbed it between your fingers, it would have a different effect. That has a higher calorie content, so that tells you that its density is a little bit higher. It's less water containing. That's the only thing we care about. So calories can measure something like that. They can help to measure density. And that's not to say that anything that's high in calories is necessarily very dense, although that is usually the case. That's just one way that we can get a reading on how much water content something has. Other than that, you really don't need to think about calories because food is not going into a system where it's going to stay and sit and stagnate and breed fungus and breed bacterial growth. It's going into a system where it's going to be in constant flux and keep moving. Because when you live this lifestyle, you're eating light to heavy. So starting the morning with your lightest foods, moving into your next light foods, and then your heavier foods in the evening. So things are really lined up to move quickly. You're eating things in quick exit combinations, which means that you're eating for maximum digestibility, so they'll flow right through you. And instead of, you know, sticking around and taking 8 to 12 hours to digest. So you're not talking about food going in and sitting. Calories do not matter. The second part of this question, which is monitoring foods based on fats and starches, again, I would have to say that this really depends on the quality of the fat or starch and the quality of the food. So the starchy things that are like grains and that are like sweet potatoes, those are things that are a lower quality in the body because of their yeast feeding capacity. So if we are eating to rid the body of systemic yeast and systemic fungal growth, you don't want to eat things that are starchy in that way. So something like a baked sweet potato, a baked yam, a baked winter squash, that kind of starchy is okay. Any starchier than that, so things like processed pasta, things like bread, things like white potatoes, those are things that are going to tend to be a little bit more yeast feeding. So it's not that they're innately bad, it's that they're not working in the systems that we have right now. They will not be conducive to weight loss because you cannot lose weight and be in the body that you want to be in when you have systemic yeast overgrowth. So in order to rid the body of systemic yeast overgrowth and lose the weight you want, you can't feed the yeast and fungal growth with starchy foods. In terms of fats, cooked fats are always going to be pretty detrimental in the body. They're sticky and gluey. They're non-health generating. We don't really do the cooked fats, with the exception of a little bit of high-quality organic butter or a little bit of coconut butter to cook something in. or to add a little bit of flavor to the meal. Also, a little bit of olive oil in something like a marinara sauce wouldn't be too bad. But other than that, we really steer clear of the cooked fats. But again, it's not because of their calorie content. It's because of their density. They tend to be very, very holding in the body. So it's not going to be conducive to getting rid of the obstruction that you want to remove in order to be in the weight you want to be in. For avocados, avocados do combine with other starchy vegetables. So that's a fair enough question in lumping them in with a starch. And they also do contain a lot of fat. So it's fair enough lumping them in with fats. However, they are so water-containing that they're a wonderful food. They're not starchy enough to feed systemic yeast overgrowth, and their fat is raw and uncooked and fast-moving. So it's going to be it's fine to have it in the avocado. So Natalia, I know, says, you know, try to keep it 2 avocados per meal or under, which is really generous, and you can still keep losing weight, and you can still keep feeling great with 2 avocados per meal.
Anna?
Yeah?
I'm not sure if it's just me, but you put sweet potato in the non-yeast feeding category, correct?
Indeed, I did.
Okay, good. I heard it differently, and I was just wanted to clarify.
Sweet potato, yam, and winter squash, they are starchy vegetables. They do, in terms of digestion and in terms of food combining, they do go in the starchy vegetables category. However, they're not yeast feeding enough that you need to omit them from the lifestyle. So they still have a place. You can still eat them if you're eating a detox for women or modern detox approach where you're dealing with systemic yeast.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, let's go to my lovely mother-in-law, Patrice Dennis. Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Oh, great. I'm in my car, so I'm always suspicious if you can hear me or not. I have a question. I noticed that when I have been juicing, I have been developing a rash around my eyes. I take the same, they sort of get red and irritated. When I take the exact same ingredients that I'm using in my juice and I'm making a smoothie out of them, I don't get the rash around my eyes.
Yes, that makes sense.
Does it?
What are you having in your juice, by the way?
My juice usually compiles of romaine, kale, and spinach, and then I use coconut water, a lemon, carrot, and ginger.
That sounds delicious. Okay, so I can definitely speak to that. Usually when there's a skin situation, it means there's a little bit of active yeast present. And when there's a detoxification process happening, sometimes things that you've visited in the past can flare back up again. And we talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago in terms of eczema. There was a question about eczema, and it's the same kind of thing. I would suspect, without being able to dive too much into your lifestyle, I would suspect that what's happening is that you're hitting something, and it's not quite able to get out yet. So when you have something as awakening and fast-moving and hydrating as that juice going in, it's magnetizing that acidic waste, moving through the system, and then hitting some kind of obstruction, and it's causing a little bit of irritation there. You're going in the right direction, and as long as it's not causing any harm and it's not, you know, debilitating or horribly itchy or anything like that, your best bet would certainly be to get yourself to some colon hydrotherapy and get that waste right out. But in the meantime, I would say definitely keep juicing if it's not too hard for you. It's just a little bit of reawakened matter circulating. It's a little bit toxic. The juice is, of course, going to move that around a little bit more heavily than a smoothie because the smoothie is slowed by digestion, so it's not being mainlined into the body quite so quickly.
So do you think, though, that if I did continue with smoothies with the same ingredients, that eventually the detox would happen?
I think smoothies are just a horse of a different color. You have to have the vegetable juice. The vegetable juice is so quickly assimilated into the body. It's so hydrating. It's so alkaline. It's the center point of the whole lifestyle. You've got to keep the vegetable juice. The smoothies, they require digestion. It's a little bit slower, and it's not going to go right where you want it when you want it. So I don't think you can get the same effect, the same detoxification process, by doing just the smoothies and omitting the juices.
Okay, very good. I should say.
But
so
are you able to get to enemas, or are you able to get to a colon hydrotherapist?
Oh yeah, I have a great one right here, and I do go to her frequently because she and I have been trying to work on this, trying to figure out what the heck is going on, why we can't resolve my eye issue.
Yeah, and how long has it been going on?
Well, it's almost probably been a little bit over 8 months now. I mean,
wow, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and are you doing detox for women, yeast centric or yeast conscious approach to eating?
I am. I actually have
you
to
are.
Went to a clinic where I did all just non-yeasted food, and it was interesting. As soon as I started the juicing part there, it came right back.
Yeah. And is the coconut water that you're using raw?
It is. It's right from the coconut.
Okay. I would even omit the coconut water for a little while.
Okay.
I would be curious to see how that works. Coconut water can be slightly yeast feeding. It's not in everybody, but you can tell if it's yeast feeding or not by how you feel afterwards. If you feel really hungry, or if you feel strangely compelled towards certain foods, I call it waking up the dinosaur, the T-Rex. If you feel like you want to tear through some food afterwards, or you're just desperate to have your smoothie, or you know whatever it is that's coming next, you can pretty much count on that it's just touched on a little bit of yeast, and your body is, well, the yeast is calling out for more. Natalia calls it the yeast monster for a reason. I would try omitting the coconut water and seeing if that helps in terms of the eye stuff. The other thing is that if you're doing everything right, you've taken out the starches and sugars that would feed the yeast, you've taken out the more gluey things like the dense meat and dairy products, you're eating in quick exit combinations, you're starting every day with a juice, and you're getting colon hydrotherapy, I would tell you it's definitely going to work its way out. The other thing is that I have found several times with several different clients that skin issues correlate to an emotional situation in their life. And try as we might, we can't quite put our finger on what the issue is dietetically, and we dig and dig and dig, and then boom, something comes out of nowhere, and I realize that they're dealing with a really big emotional situation that wasn't brought to light earlier in the conversation, and it really, really does affect that process.
Very interesting. Well, appreciate the information. Thank you.
And let me know, please let me know how it goes and how it turns out. I'm definitely interested to see. Try omitting the coconut water for a week and see what happens.
All right, very good.
Thanks, Patrice.
Thank you.
Okay, let's do one from the dashboard, Anna. My boyfriend
sure.
My boyfriend eats a mainstream diet and drinks as well. He is very lean, but where does all the waste go? Is it compacted more deeply in his cells? His hairline is also receding, but I noticed that receding hairlines in males is more prevalent. Can you explain? Thank you.
Absolutely. So everybody stores waste differently, and everybody's body experiences toxic accumulation differently. Men don't tend to put on weight the way women do, but we all, every woman's body is different too. Some women, the more toxic they get, the skinnier they get. There's a kind of sick, skinny look when you really are afraid for their health. But the way that we gain weight and the way that we hold waste is almost the body's defense mechanism in sequestering toxic accumulation away from the vital organs. So it's almost something, strangely, that we should be grateful for. Your saddlebags are protecting your heart, lungs, and liver.
Some people don't have that built-in mechanism. Their body just doesn't store the waste that way. So is it compacting into his cells? Yes, just the way it is for everybody. Is it compacting into the walls of his colon? Yes, just the way it is for everybody. Men usually have a stronger bowel, so he's more likely than a woman who's eating the same diet to be able to move the stuff out. However, it is still leaving behind a trail which is building upon itself, building up in the colon, spreading into the body at large, and certainly you will see things like skin, hair, and nails suffering first. The receding hairline is not surprising, although that's also having to do with lineage. And then, unfortunately, in those people that tend to maintain a leaner physique, because they don't have the protection of that weight gain, you often see, signs of a toxic accumulation in health issues earlier than in people who are more prone to weight gain. So, unfortunately, a lot of clients that I work with who don't tend to gain the weight are dealing with, reproductive system issues in their 20s. Issues like that where it's not quite time for the body to have compromised the heart, the lungs, and the liver, those really vital organs, but the smaller systems of the body, the less necessary systems of the body are starting to really act up. So, he might get away with it for a little bit longer. Men tend to get away with stuff for a little bit longer, but he will certainly start to see the effects. And I know you're not alone in having a significant other who's living a mainstream lifestyle, so I know that can be a struggle.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, I've noticed that the people that don't gain weight, they'll have things like migraine headaches, or a lot of times they'll have depression or anxiety, or, that is manifesting in different ways with them. And just to echo, I remember when that realization hit me, it was like, oh, my gosh, the fat is actually kind of a good thing. It's protecting the parts of me that are actually keeping me alive, so I should be thankful that it's there, although I would really much rather get it off. But that was an interesting perspective shift for me.
Well, we can be thankful for it now that we have a modality to slowly and gently awaken and release it. Before we had that.
Exactly.
It doesn't feel so thankful, does it?
No, definitely not. Good. Thank you, Anna. Let's go to Wella again. Hi, Wella.
Hi. So my quick question is, why does digestion freeze when you are flying?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you.
Oh, sorry. My question is, why does digestion freeze when you are flying?
Oh, when
flying.
You go up and down? Yeah, that's pressure. And it actually causes a little bit of a reverse of the system. And also, it's dehydration.
I see. Okay.
So it's not only causing a little bit of backup because of the way the feeling. You know how it feels in your gut.
Yeah.
The pressure direction, the movement of digestion has kind of been thrown through a loop. I mean, we're certainly, the human body wasn't designed for flight. And so that happens. And then there's also, you can read in mainstream magazines, they always talk about how you should drink X amount of water for hours you're in the air. Truth is that we really get dehydrated up there in that compressed air chamber, and it's freezing outside the plane, so your body's rapidly dehydrating, and so it's certainly dehydrating the waste that's sitting in your colon, and it definitely takes, if you have a colon hydrotherapy treatment a couple days after you've flown, your colon hydrotherapist will be able to tell you that the first matter that's released is really hockey puck-like. It's
wow.
Really been hydrated. I know.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, it does work not eating while flying, but I've always wondered, why does it work?
Yeah, it also works to really hydrate. So, making sure that you get your juice, making sure that all of your meals surrounding that flight are very high water content.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
Okay, Anna, let's go to one of the questions from Life Force Families. My daughter is about to turn 10, and she's definitely going through some changes. I'm starting to wonder what kind of protection to offer her when she starts menstruating. I've always used commercial tampons myself because until recently I didn't know how toxic they are, and now that I know, I'm searching for affordable options. We're a student family, so cost is a huge factor. The organic cotton tampons and pads are so expensive. For myself, I'm leaning toward a Diva cup, and I just recently bumped into these soft cups. I like that the Diva cups are reusable. What I'm wondering, though, is are those things safe for a young girl?
I wonder if her daughter is menstruating already at age 10.
It sounds not yet. She said
not
she's
yet.
Starting to think about menstruation, yeah.
Okay, so there's two parts to this. One is being cost effective, and one is finding the best and safest remedy. I haven't done a lot of research in terms of the Diva Cup. I have several clients who have used it as well as several friends with great success. I would say the Diva Cup is certainly not for a beginner. It's a little tricky. I've heard some pretty crazy stories. The Diva Cup, for those of you who don't know, D-I-V-A, it's a little rubber cup that is inserted into the vagina and essentially catches menstrual flow. The stories that I've heard of it being a little bit difficult to navigate are when it suctions onto the cervix, so almost like a diaphragm, it can kind of get stuck up there until it's full enough to release. So that's certainly not something that the beginner wants to navigate, and certainly not something that a young girl who, you know, is probably definitely not sexually active and doesn't have a lot of experience in that realm, I would say that's probably, I don't think I could have handled that. So I would say probably not the Diva Cup, depending on your daughter. In terms of affordable organic cotton, the best resource that I've found so far is Trader Joe's. The Trader Joe's brand tampons and pads are 100% organic. So really cool. They're really, really affordable. You do not want to be doing tampons in general. Yes, sometimes it's a necessity because you're going to be at the beach or you're going to be on a long flight or there's a lifestyle situation where a tampon is the only thing. But in general, this lifestyle is about freedom from obstruction, so you don't want to create obstruction. And the menstrual cycle is about the female body's instrument for detoxification. So if you're every month being able to have this wonderful tool for ridding the body of toxicity, you certainly wouldn't want to stem that flow at all. You want to let it free. So especially for a young girl, I would say probably pads. Natalia and I have certainly looked into the old-fashioned remedy of sponges, and there are, I wish I could recommend a brand, but there are brands of reusable, rinseable sponges available that would be like a panty liner, but would also be equally nature-based. And then, you know, for a young girl, she's probably not going to have a flow as significant as an older woman, so she could probably get away with, you know, a little bit of just TP in the panties. I think she'll be absolutely fine.
Yeah, and this is like really old school, but one thing a lot of the women out here in Hawaii do that it's just really kind of sweet is they don't call it a period, they call it their moon because it goes on the 28-day cycle like the moon, and they hand make these things that they call moon pads, and they're just, it's a reusable cotton, and a lot of them like put little hearts embroidered on them and make them cute. But they use these, and this definitely will seem out there to some of you, but it's also really interesting as well. Is what they do is they actually, and this is going back like to what women used to do long time ago, is they actually collect the blood in their moon pads, and then they give it back to the earth. So they'll use it to put on plants or, you know, fertilize things in the garden. A lot of them collect the blood in a beautiful bowl, you know, as they're menstruating. And then they put it on their plants, and supposedly the plants that they put it on are the most beautiful in their garden. And the idea behind that is that Mother Earth needs blood of life, the blood of life that we shed every month, because there has been so much of the opposite kind of blood shed on her for so long now, the blood of death and war and dying. So there's a whole, you know, way maybe that we can rethink the whole concept of menstruating in general. And I can't speak from experience yet because I haven't started menstruating after my daughter was born 6 months ago yet. But I will let you guys know if any of you are interested in how to make those and then kind of the experience of wearing them and dispensing it in the garden and all of that. I'm definitely going to try it out. So just something else to share.
So, I mean, for hundreds of years, women have been using reusable.
Yeah. They didn't go to the store. They didn't go to any.
My grandmother did it. You know, her mother did it. Her mother did it. It's only recently that we've invented these disposable products. So,
exactly.
You know, just like disposable diapers versus cloth diapers, there is the option to have, a stack of cloth and keep reusing it, rinsing it, boiling it, all of that.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's see. Okay. Another one from the dashboard. My husband has terrible gas, especially after eating tofu. Foul smell, too. I am concerned for his long-term health. What might be going on to cause the gas? Food combining may be the issue, and tofu also, but what is going on in his bowel to cause this immediate gas after each meal? He also has dark spots on his back that itch.
Ooh. yuck. I can tell you gas can be a combination of things, but when it's really foul-smelling like that, I have to go straight to accumulation in the intestinal tract as well as problematic digestion. So that smell comes from carbonic gas. One of the things that Natalia always talks about is when you throw a big meal into the trash can before you go to sleep at night, you know, you dump it all in there, close the trash can up, wake up in the morning, open the trash can lid, it smells absolutely wretched. When food is going into a body at 98.6 degrees, baking all night, sitting there, and then it gets hit with more food because it hasn't all properly evacuated, it can just be absolutely disgusting. With tofu in particular in his diet, soy is completely indigestible. It really is very difficult for the body to break down. There are some things, legumes are very difficult because they're a little bit of a protein and a little bit of a starch, so it's hard for the body to handle them. Beans, the wonderful fruit, there's a reason for that. It's very, very difficult for the body to break them down. So you have this accumulation in the intestine. You have this accumulation in the colon. You have food going in and sitting and being digested for 8 to 12 hours because it's so difficult for the body to break down, and then going in on top of that mess, building up and building up and building up. I would question what his bowel movements are like, but even if they're pretty copious, it's certainly not getting all of that out, and, you know, no wonder. So there's a fermentation and gassy situation that's happening there, and I doubt that's very comfortable for him. I would say omit the tofu and focus on proper food combining, and I bet he would have a really good experience with that.
Well, and the dark spots on his back, that itch, is just another indicator that that waste is wanting to get pushed out of his skin, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And it also might mean he has a little bit of a yeast issue. So, I mean, I would guess if he's been doing something as estrogenic as soy for so long, he probably does. And skin issues really, again, are pretty usually yeast-related.
Good. Okay, thank you, Anna. Let's go to another one from the community. Okay. Are my juices okay if I make them before work about 6:30 a.m. and take them with me, store them in the fridge, and have the first one mid-morning and second about 1:30 to 3 p.m. right out of the fridge? What about juicing the night before and keeping them in the fridge overnight for the next day?
Good question. Actually, I wanted to add one more thing about carbonic gas, too. The gentleman who's having the extreme gas in the evening, I think also that one of the cool things about starting to move carbonic gas out, I think you'll have a big change in mood. I've noticed that when people are very gassy and they're able to kind of get that on the run, start to escort that carbonic gas out, they have a huge uplifting of spirits. So I wanted to add that into his hopefully omitting soy and focusing on food combining. In terms of your question about juice, Amanda,
Yes, juice loses enzymes slowly, most significantly in the first hour, but slowly throughout the day. So juice is best when it's the most fresh, if it comes from a centrifugal juicer. So that's the kind that most of us have at home, things like the Breville, the one that's a spinning screen with a blade in the middle where the vegetables get masticated and then strained through centrifugal force through the screen. So that's what we have at home, and that juice does lose a little bit of its integrity a lot during the first hour and more throughout the day. However, it's alkaline, it's water-containing, it's got life force, it's got chlorophyll. If you can get it in during the day and it's the best that you can do to take it to work with you, it's absolutely fine. You are still going to thrive and you're still going to have a wonderful experience juicing. The next day is a little bit different. The next day is a little bit too long. So freezing it is a better option in terms of next day because you're able to kind of arrest that process. And then as you thaw it out, you can enjoy your juice again. However, if it's a scenario like that, I would rather to make it the same day. If you're traveling, freeze it. If it's the only way you can get it, freeze it. Always just do the best you can, and the priority is getting the juice. But same day is best. Closest to having juice is best. It must be stored in a sealed container. It must be stored in a refrigerator. And then the other kind of juice, the non-centrifugal juice, is the Norwalk cold-pressed juice. It's a different juicing extraction method. It's a lot slower. It's a much more expensive juicer, so it's not very practical for most of us to have at home. But it does hold its integrity for up to, 3 to 4 days, depending on the vegetable content. But that's something that you can juice, bottle, seal, and put in the refrigerator for up to 3 days. So if you're somebody who is better served doing a whole lot of juicing 1 or 2 days a week, that might be the juicer for you. Those of us who are in bigger cities sometimes have access to Norwalk pressed juice that's bottled. Here in Manhattan, we have Organic Avenue, we have Liquiteria, we have the Juice Press, and lots of other little side ventures that are popping up. So we're very lucky here, and I'm sure that will definitely spread. But in the meantime, if it's a centrifugal juicer, best in the first hour, better in the same day, and freeze it if you're going to store it for longer.
Very good. Thank you, Anna. Okay, we are up on our hour. Does anyone else have a question that they'd like to ask before we conclude? You can go ahead and press 1 if you do. And if not, I'd just like to take a quick poll. If you like the format of these calls and if you're finding them helpful, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad. If you would like to see a different format for the calls or you're not finding them particularly helpful, go ahead and press 2. And these are going to be calls that we were creating together, so we would love your feedback if you can give that to us. That's awesome. So go ahead and press 1 if you're liking the format and you're finding the calls helpful, 2 if you would like to see the calls done differently or have some suggestions for us. And Joanna, I'm not seeing those results. Can you just real quick see and tell us what the percentages are? Joanne, I have you off mute. Yeah. I know that you have some background
noise.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. So 72% have said that pressed 1, that they're helpful.
Okay. Okay. And no 2s yet?
Nope, that's the only result so far.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody.
Oh, great.
That's great.
100% then.
Yeah, yay.
Yeah.
Okay.
100% of keyboard pressers.
Exactly.
And those of you, if you are wanting to press 2 or aren't able to get to it and you have a suggestion for a change in the format, we are very, very open to making this for you. So
yes.
Certainly feel free to knock us an email.
Yes. Awesome. Okay. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll have this recorded audio available within the next couple of days. And again, over the next 2 weeks, if you encounter anything that you think would be really helpful for the people on the call to listen to and hear, please make little notes and come prepared to share. And thank you, everybody who participated, and thank you, everybody who listened, and for everyone for joining. It's been really, really nice to connect with all of you. All right, take care, and we'll talk with you soon.